भवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवतसेवया भगवति उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी। कृष्णे स्वधामोपगते धनमज्ञानादिभिः सह कलौ नष्टदृशामेष पुरा नारकोऽधुनोदितः। ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम की जय। दिस इज कैंटो 5 चैप्टर 14। वी आर ऑन टेक्स्ट नंबर 9। द चैप्टर इज एंटाइटल्ड द फॉरेस्ट ऑफ एंजॉयमेंट। दिस इज इन प्रोज व्हिच आई विल रिसाइट। क्वचित् च वात्यौपम्यया प्रमदया अरोहम आरोपितस्तत्काल रजसा रजनीभूत इवा साधु मर्यादो रजस वलाक्षो अपि दिग्देवता अधिरजस्वलमतिर् न विजानाति। Translation: sometimes, as if blinded by the dust of a whirlwind, the conditioned soul sees the beauty of the opposite sex, which is called pramada. Being thus bewildered, he is raised upon the lap of a woman, and at that time his good senses are overcome by the force of passion. He thus becomes almost blind with lusty desire and disobeys the rules and regulations governing sex life. He does not know that his disobedience is witnessed by different demigods, and he enjoys illicit sex in the dead of night, not seeing the future punishment awaiting him. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. In Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, text 11, it is said, dhanamaviruddho bhuteshu kamosmi bharatarshita. Sex is allowed only for the begetting of children, not for enjoyment. One can indulge in sex to beget a good child for the benefit of the family, society, and world. Otherwise, sex is against the rules and regulations of religious life. A materialistic person does not believe that everything is managed in nature, and he does not know that if one does something wrong, he is witnessed by different demigods. A person enjoys illicit sex, and due to his blind, lusty desire, he thinks that no one can see him. But this illicit sex is thoroughly observed by the agents of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, the person is punished in so many ways. Presently in Kali Yuga, there are many pregnancies due to illicit sex, and sometimes abortions ensue. These sinful activities are witnessed by the agents of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and a man and woman who create such a situation are punished in the future by the stringent laws of material nature. Daivi hi esha gunamayi mama maya duratyaya. Illicit sex is never excused, and those who indulge in it are punished life after life. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 16, text number 20. Asurim yonim apanna murha janmani janmani mam aprapya iva kaunteya tato yanti adhamam gitim. Attaining repeated birth among the species of demoniac life, such persons can never approach me. Gradually, they sink down to the most abominable type of existence. The Supreme Personality of Godhead does not allow anyone to act against the stringent laws of material nature. Therefore, illicit sex is punished life after life. Second time he said this. Illicit sex creates pregnancies, and these unwanted pregnancies lead to abortion. Those involved become implicated in these sins, so much so that they are punished in the same way in the next life. Thus, in the next life, they also enter the womb of a mother and are killed in the same way. All these things can be avoided by remaining on the transcendental platform of Krishna consciousness. In this way, one does not commit sinful activity. Illicit sex is the most prominent sin due to lusty desire. When one associates with the mode of passion, he's implicated in suffering life after life. Any questions or comments? Srila Prabhupada ki. Srila Prabhupada is always characteristically, unmistakably clear in what he's saying, as we see in this verse. So let's invoke auspiciousness by Mangala Charana, and then we can speak a few things about this topic. Om Agnana Tibarantasya Gnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Nama Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kada Mahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guruham Shri Uttapada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha. He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Haripriye Vanchakalpatarubhyascha kripa sindhu bhaiva cha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. The conditioned soul, sometimes, as if blinded by the dust of a whirlwind, the conditioned soul sees the beauty of the opposite sex, which is called pramada. Being thus bewildered, he is raised upon the lap of a woman, and at that time his good senses are overcome by the force of passion. He thus becomes almost blind with lusty desire and disobeys the rules and regulations governing sex life. He does not know that his disobedience is witnessed by different demigods, and he enjoys illicit sex in the dead of night, not seeing the future punishment awaiting him. There are several very important things that Prabhupada has brought to our attention here. Even in his commentary, or in his translation, he's adding things that are not in the commentary of any acharya that I've seen. For example, he says that the conditioned soul sees the beauty of the opposite sex, which is called pramada. I don't see this anywhere else. It's not untrue. So why does Srila Prabhupada say this? We might get a hint from the English poet Shakespeare, William Shakespeare, famous poet. He said, what did he say? He said, tell me, where does fancy lie? Or in the heart, or in the head? Where be God? How nourished? Reply, reply. Then he gives the reply. He says, it is engendered in the eyes, dies in the cradle where it lies. Let us all ring fancy's bell. I'll begin it. Ding dong bell. William Shakespeare. What does it mean? He's talking about sex attraction, which begins with the sight. We privilege the vision, isn't it? Whenever we think of approaching God, we think of darshan. I want to see. In fact, a philosophical perspective on life is also called darshan, a vision, sight. So the eyes are very important. All of our senses are important. They all can ensnare us, as Bhagavad Gita tells us. Even one of the senses upon which the mind fixates, it can ensnare us. And this is elaborated later in the Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam generally, especially in the 11th canto, it expands upon the content of the Bhagavad Gita. So, sight is a very important thing. Srila Prabhupada has mentioned it here. Jai, Shri Shri Gauranitai, Shri Shri Krishna Balaram, Shri Shri Lalita Vishakha Sahita Radha Shyama Sundara Ki Jai. Pramada, this is another thing. Pramada means that one becomes maddened, perhaps. Pramatta, also the word is used, it's similar. Mada, mada means infatuation or intoxication, or, you know, we speak of being intoxicated, we can say. So pramada, the intoxicating beauty of the opposite sex. Sangat sanjayate kamaha. Our desires, they are engendered or created, you can say, or at least nourished by what we associate with. And sight is a very powerful mode of association. Sangha. What does the word sangha mean? Samyak gacchati iti sangha. That which goes all together with something. Samyak means completely, the whole thing. Sangha, it all goes together. What you see, what you hear, what you touch, what you smell, what you taste, right? All these things conspire to create a particular psychological mode with which we have to deal. And not only in this life, but life after life. It is a very, very touchy situation in the material existence, because we are creating our next life in this way right now. Be very careful what you do. Monitor very strictly what you hear, what you see, what you taste, what you smell, what you feel. Bhadram karnebhi shrunyama devaha ityadi. In the Upanishads, Shruti Mantra, we hear this. The eyes should be used to see only auspicious things. The ears should be used to hear only auspicious things. In this way, if everything is flooding into the mind from all of its agents in the form of its tentacles, what are the hands? 10 hands of the mind, or 10 disciples of the mind. These 5 knowledge-acquiring senses and 5 experiential, our working senses. If we monitor the activities of the senses, we can, create the architecture of our psychology. We can change our current trajectory. What happens if you take birth in this world? What is your default? The default is that you will be steered, or your trajectory will be chosen for you by the influence of these 3 modes of material nature: goodness, passion, and ignorance. Srila Prabhupada is quoted at least 2 verses from Bhagavad Gita, and one of them is, well, 2 of them from chapter 7. He says, for example, Dhanamaviruddho bhuteshu kamosmi bharatarshatha. I'm the strength of the strong, devoid of passion and desire. I'm sex life which is not contrary to religious principles, O Lord of the Bharatas. Different acharyas say different things about this, but Srila Prabhupada is very clear. According to his purport, sex life, according to religious principles or dharma, should be for the propagation of children, not otherwise. This is what we've heard in today's purport as well. The responsibility of parents is to make their offspring Krishna conscious. And that begins before the offspring exists. This is a very, very important thing that's often overlooked. Why? Because the psychology of the parents at the moment of conception, or in general you can say at the time of conception, in the period of life in which conception takes place, even that consciousness is going to attract a similar type of conditioned soul. If the parents are liberated, then a liberated soul will be born. Therefore, we have a responsibility to become liberated even before begetting children. Now, here's the problem. The people who get married are the people who are generally not liberated. And this is something that has to be recognized. Because all the do's and don'ts of the Shastra, these are called vidhis and nishedhas, they postulate, they take as granted that we're starting from a position of criminality. We're starting from a position of contamination that we need to remove. We're not starting from the very liberal and maybe idealistic and very certainly optimistic assumption that, you know, we're all fine, everything's okay. That's not the case. All the vidhis and the nishedhas and the shastras, the rules and regulations, are, as it's stated by Sridhar Swami in his commentary, the maryada, the etiquette, even you can say. These things all assume that we are conditioned souls in need of reformation. Reformation. Sum, again, it's the same prefix that goes with Sangha. So in order to rectify Sangha, you have to have samskara. What does samskara mean? To refine something. We often mention there are two kinds of language. What kind are they? Anybody know? Can you guess what I'm thinking? Two general categories of language. Samskrita and Prakrita. Samskrita means the refined language. It's sometimes called Devavani, or the language of the gods. Powerful language, pure language. How much so that it's also called Girbana, like a bow. When you release words, they pierce. And you, like an arrow, you cannot call back words once they've been spoken. So, anyway, this is the Sanskrit language. It has been refined over many, many centuries, if not millennia. Actually, it's an internal language. Certainly, it's spoken in the Svarga regions, and among more civilized people, even in this world. But not everyone here is civilized. Therefore, we have Prakrita also. Prakrita means the natural language. Language. Natural. Wild. Uncultivated. Just like you let a field grow without any kind of regulation at all, then that's what we're talking about. So the language is only one aspect of human existence. Language is only one aspect. The manifestation of this samskara, or the process of reformation or refinement, it is actually applicable to all aspects of human existence and endeavor. Therefore, we have samskara. Dashavita samskaras we hear of, or sometimes, you know, between 10 and 13 or so. Samskaras. This is what defines a human being. This is what defines a human being. The person who is undergoing the samskaras which determine one's future trajectory. How do they do that? By changing your nature over time. And it takes time. It's not an easy process. But this is the unique prerogative of the human species. We heard a few days ago, someone was describing Brahmacharya. We're very fortunate to have. You notice they always sit up in front, the orange ones. Brahmacharya. They're very seriously utilizing this human form of life for what it has to give. Animals cannot do this, it was pointed out. Only human beings can control this sexual urge, especially gross sex life. But almost we can say it's more important to control the psychology that leads to any kind of sexual attachment, but especially illicit sex, which is the topic of today's verse. Now, Sridhar Swami, in commenting on this verse, Bhagavad Gita chapter 7, text number 11, he points out, because the two words are used, kamaraga. Kama means the desire, the passionate desire for something you do not have and want to have. That's called kama. It's general, but it's especially in the form of this sexual desire, because it's the strongest, generally, considered to be the strongest of all material desires. So kama, or desire for something we do not have, that is passionate. Worse than that is raga. When you indulge in kama, you create raga. Raga is the tamasic byproduct of kama. And raga means the desire to continue something that you do have. In other words, it creates attachment. Sometimes, especially in the case of illicit sex, we call this vajralep. It's like when you grind chandan, everybody has the experience of grinding chandan. Now, if you add some oil there, that doesn't really work. It just ruins everything and creates a big mess. So sinful activities are like that. It's very, very difficult to remove the stain upon the psychology that is created when one engages in these pungent activities that are known as sinful. Especially illicit sex. Srila Prabhupada says here very clearly in his purport. Let me find it. Anybody know what I'm thinking? Yeah, here he says, illicit sex is the most prominent sin due to lusty desire. Most prominent, you can say, for many reasons it's prominent. It's certainly socially prominent nowadays, isn't it? You will be, your sexual psychology will automatically be engendered if you merely exist in modern society. All you have to do is take birth and be socialized in modern society, and you will develop a psychology that is exceedingly sexual in nature. And that's true in India now. It wasn't so much so 10 years ago. Those who know, who live here, they know this. At least I didn't see it 10 years ago. I left Vrindavan in 2006 and came back in 2011, and I thought, my God, what happened? I took a metro train in Delhi, and I saw that the young men and women are flirting together, and never ever used to see this here. But now we have it. And I mean, you can say India in particular is in the midst of a sexual revolution, much as the United States saw in the 1960s. This is the trajectory. And the only thing that is required in order to affect this, and what's driving this, is Sangha. Sangha in the form of what? Media, business. Go to Bangalore. Just check out Bangalore. I call it Los Angeles. Because it's just like that. I mean, of all places. Anyway. And largely through Sangha, there was a great influx of foreign association into that city some years ago. And we're seeing the results. So Sangat Sanjayate Kama. This is very, very important to consider. So Sridhar Swami says that passion means you want something that you don't have. This is the curiosity factor. In English we say curiosity killed the cat. Monkeys also tend to be curious. If you read Hitopadesha and other such literatures, you'll find many stories about the simian nature and how it kills us. Because all of us have a simian nature, that is to say a monkey-like nature, to one degree or another, and especially the monkeys are very enthusiastic about illicit sex. Anywhere, anytime, even in the temple, I've seen them doing this. You know, and it was pointed out for our benefit some weeks ago by, I think, His Holiness Subhag Swami also, even ISKCON devotees in the temple. But their minds, they're standing in front of the deity, but their minds are going to the other direction. We have to be careful about that. So therefore the Shastras very, very strictly advise, do not do this, 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 and that. And do this, 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 and that. There are many vidhis given. Vidhi means a positive instruction, what you should do positively. Nishedha, on the other hand, means what you should not do. Because in the Shastra, whenever you give a positive injunction, you also give a negative restriction. So in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, those who are initiated, Srila Prabhupada has set up certain vows that we take. Some of them are positive and some of them are negative. What is the positive vow? We chant Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And the negative restrictions, we avoid these papa, these pungent, staining, psychologically degrading activities in the form of illicit sex, meat eating, intoxication, and speculating or gambling. That's very, very important. This is the very basic and core essence of the vidhis and the nishedhas of the Shastra. In other words, you should always remember Krishna and you should never forget Krishna. This is how you do it. But we find that even those who with all good intention attempt to take up this process, follow these principles and chant these in certain fixed rounds, 16 rounds of this Hare Krishna mantra, they can't do it. Isn't it? Is it true or is it not true? Sometimes people fail in this. Not sometimes. quite often. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada, we can see, as far as his trajectory was concerned, we all have our own trajectory in life. What does trajectory mean? The movement, the direction in which you're moving. And I, as I said, if you don't consciously construct your trajectory in life, then one will be assigned to you automatically by the laws of nature. And given the super predominance of Rajoguna and Tamoguna, as are discussed at length in chapters 14, 17 and 18 of Bhagavad Gita, if we don't carefully try to mold our life, as Prabhupada says, in such a way that we elevate the consciousness through judicious choices, very careful choices about what to do, what not to do, then we will be automatically taken for a ride, like the proverbial passenger in a chariot who's got no hand on any reins. 5 wild horses, no reins. So this is what our senses are like. So which one is more important, the mind or the genital in this case? It's hard to say because they're very closely connected. But in the verse just after the one that Prabhupada quotes, first off in his purport, Krishna says, Ye chaiva sattvika bhavat rajasas tamasascha ye matta eveti tanvidhi natu aham teshu te mayi. All these modes, the goodness, passion, or ignorance, they're manifested by my energy. And tribhirguna mayer bhavair ebhi saravamidam jagat mohitam nabhijanati mamebhya paramavyayam. Deluded by these 3 modes, the whole world does not know me. Then we come to the second verse that Srila Prabhupada quotes. Just 3 verses away, he quotes text 14 of chapter 7. Anybody know? Please repeat with me. Daivi hyesha gunamayi mama maya duratyaya mameva ye prapadyante mayam etam tarantite. Why does Srila Prabhupada quote these verses in full throughout his books, even though we all know them? Because we would not all know them unless he quoted them in full. That gives us a sense of what the Siddhanta is. What are the important points that we absolutely must not forget? So, therefore I had you recite it with me. What does it mean? This divine energy of mind, Daivi Maya, consisting of the 3 modes, is difficult. Difficult, we heard the other day, is an understatement. It's virtually impossible. Impossible. But those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. This is why, Sridhar Swami says, Krishna says, Mam Eva, only if you surrender to me, you're going to cross beyond it. Otherwise, it's impossible. Why? Because it's divine. Daivi Maya means divine Maya. Now there's another interpretation of Daivi Maya given by Sridhar Swami in his commentary on this verse. He says, Daivi, it derives from the word div. Div means in the sky, divi, and deva, demigod, also derives from the same verbal root, the noun, deva. So, divyati, those who are playing in Svargaloka, such as Indra and other demigods, how are they playing? They have limitless sense gratification. Unimaginable to our, within our, we have no frame of reference to understand the scope and magnitude of the sense gratification that is enjoyed in Svargaloka. So, therefore, if you want to talk about illicit sex, you can very easily extend this to even that level of creation. We all know, and I won't ask anyone to repeat, why does Indra have thousands of eyes all over his body? Because he also has girl trouble, we might say, from time to time. And it's not just Indra, right? Even the best of demigods, even their priests, Brahmins. I mean, everyone is tormented in this material world. So sometimes we see that people think, well, you know, as I mentioned in the beginning, Prabhupada's purport is very clear about what his principle is and what he expects and how he's understanding the Shastra. But sometimes it's actually quite common. People think, well, you know, chanting 50 rounds before we conceive a child, you know, this is okay, but, I mean, nobody does that, really. Or even, you know, sometimes we even hear, we can follow three principles, it's okay also. There is a class of devotee who feels this way. But this is not coming from the Shastra. This is coming from a social perspective. The argument, I hear this, people say this. Well, nobody does these things nowadays. Have you ever heard this? Nobody follows these things nowadays. It is a baseless argument if we understand that the injunctions of Shastra are meant to mold our lives in this world in such a way that our nature changes. Because unless you change your samskara, I didn't finish the point. It doesn't only mean the practical application of this purificatory process. It also means the result of that purification in the form of a psychological change, or a particular psychological state that has been created as a result of that reformation. That is also samskara. In exactly the same way that the word dharma, which Prabhupada uses here in chapter 7 of the Gita, it doesn't only mean the obligatory duties that we have to perform on a practical level, tangible level. It also means the nature on which those duties are based. And this is a very, very important thing. This is an ontological principle. It's a metaphysical reality. We're talking here about something that is both earthly and transcendent at the same time. Sometimes we translate the word dharma as intrinsic property of a thing, correct? Have you heard this? The intrinsic nature of something. The dharma of water is, the dharma of sugar is, and fire has, these are its properties. Lakshana, swarup. So that's a very, this is what Iravati Karve, one Indian scholar, has called the naturalistic aspect of dharma. And then there's, of course, a normative aspect, which is prescribed duty, even religious observance, maybe social obligation, all these other, you know. Now, the thing is that it actually means all these things at once, and you cannot separate them. You cannot say that any time the word dharma is used, it does not mean the naturalistic aspect or the normative aspect. They have to go together. This is why it's not an option that one can say, well, this is in the old days, people used to follow these things. If you want to be a human being, your humanity is not defined only in terms of biology. It's defined in terms of adherence to these Shastric codes of nature. And this is something that we get from Bhagavad Gita, particularly in chapter 16. Verses 6 through 20 of the 16th chapter, they outline the demoniac nature. In fact, Krishna spends more time elaborating on the demoniac nature than he did on the divine nature. That's something we should think about. But he concludes by saying that... Where are we here? Hold on. Sorry. He concludes by saying that the person who does not follow the injunctions of the Shastra, he necessarily undergoes all the processes, psychological, karmic, physical, and otherwise, that are mentioned beginning with verse 6. Well, I might as well read them, because otherwise not so many people know. Dvaubhuta saragau lokesmin daiva asura evacha. This is also in Vishnu Purana. He says, there are two kinds in this world. Some of them are demons, and some of them are suras, or devotees. He says those who are demoniac, they don't know what to do and what not to do. How do we know what to do and what not to do? Who knows the verse? Tasmat chastram pramanam te karya karya vijanataha. Krishna says very clearly at the end. You know what to do by what is enjoined in the shastra. They don't know because they don't hear. Therefore, neither cleanliness nor proper behavior nor truth is found in them. They say, consequently, that this world is unreal, it has no foundation, there's nobody in control, it's just a result of lust, sex. Because that's the topic we're talking about. Following these conclusions, these people are meant for the destruction of the world, actually. Kshayaya, jagato ehetaha. They're not meant for the benefit of this world, it says, but rather for its destruction. Their very nature is that they can only destroy, because they have a simian nature, just like monkeys. They're also tamasic. Monkeys, do you ever see them doing anything constructive? One used to be when I was at Govardhan, we used to go south for the winter because it gets too cold. And one year we went to the south, and when we came back, every single electrical wire in the building had not only been disconnected, but also spliced all the way up. They play in this way, and we know why we have cages on our roofs. Because they like the sound of ripping cloth. Just for sport. Divyati. They play in this way. So, mankind in the mode of ignorance, especially, but also in the mode of passion, we have this monkey-like nature. Therefore, we can only destroy the world. And have you noticed that the world is being destroyed now? Raise your hand if you don't think that the world is being destroyed right now. You don't think, well, he's probably got some transcendental answer. I won't even pursue it. All right, but let's continue. Taking shelter. Kamam ashritya. Taking shelter of lust. See, they've already invented a philosophy by which you don't have to control your senses. That's the first thing. The intelligence is gone. Therefore, they justify taking shelter of this thing. And they, being thus illusioned, they're always sworn to unclean work. And then he outlines in so many ways the egoistic and materialistic way in which these people think. And he says, thus perplexed by various anxieties and bound by a network of illusions, mohajala. Here it's described as dust, you know, but this is even more explicit. It's like fish are caught in a net. He becomes too strongly attached, kama bhogeshu, to lust and enjoyment, and he falls down into hell. And Krishna says furthermore, in a more scary verse, tanaham dvishataha kruran sangsareshu naradhaman kshepami ajasram ashubhan asuri shvevyonishu. Once they've fallen down into hellish condition, I make sure that they go deeper and deeper into that. They keep going down to the extent that they hold on to lusts. So there are two things we mentioned in the beginning. There's kama and raga. There's the desire for something we don't have, and there's attachment to that which we do have. The brahmacharis generally, or the renunciates in general, they have to fight with this enemy. Curiosity. Just like when one walks past a brothel or a bar, we have, what do they call them here? Taverns. In Bangalore you have many of them. The curiosity is perhaps aroused by that association, sangat sanjayate kama, that what would happen if I go in? What's it like in there? What are they doing? What is this experience? I don't know. The brahmachari has to deal with this. The householder, on the other hand, and to a lesser extent the vanaprastha, they have to deal with raga. They have to deal with the attachment that has already been created as a result of indulging in this activity. Therefore, they've created a mess for themselves that they have to unravel somehow. And we know from the Shastra, it's described as a very tight knot. In fact, Krishna says you can't unravel it, you have to slash it. Therefore, we saw in the case of Indra, he became attached even when he had so many piggies, little piglets, running around and his beautiful sow. And I mean, can you imagine how Indra's mind must have been agitated by seeing the rear end of that sow? This is what we can do to ourselves. In the Upanishads, this Rishi Vamadev, he had this stunning epiphany one day that, my God, I was once the sun. At one point, I used to be Manu. And look at me now. You see? Do we think like this? No. We look in the mirror and we think, I'm doing pretty good. Frame of reference being our immediate social circle only. That is a tamasic vision. Shastra Chakshu means Mahatma, broad-minded, broad vision. Pariksya lokan karma chetan brahmano nirvedam ayan nasti akrita kritena. The person who is educated, shishta, trained up, he sees that all possible projects that life offers one, whether in the realm of desire or attachment, and he thinks, there's nothing here that's not karma, so what is the point in me? If I were to indulge here and add more karma to karma, what is the point? It gets nowhere. That person is a fit candidate to achieve a spiritual master, it says. Tadeva vijnanartham eva abhigachet. This is from Mundaka Upanishad. So, there are many, many things. I mean, I touched on about half of the things that I could have said in this verse, but the time is running short now. I mean, I can suggest, if we want to know more about these things, study very carefully Srila Prabhupada's purports to chapter 16, beginning with between text 6 and text 20. And it will at least point us in the direction of where this purport is leading us. Because the implicit message of Srila Prabhupada's purport is that a conditioned soul should tolerate the urge to connect the senses with their objects and elevate the consciousness thereby. The actual specific means, aside from the very basics of Krishna consciousness, for doing this, they are mentioned by Srila Prabhupada in the chapter 16. And Krishna himself also, just to sum up and to conclude unmistakably, he says at the end of chapter 16, three gates leading to hell that we've described already, what are they? Lust, anger, greed. So today we're talking about lust. And then he says, the person who has escaped these gates, what does he do? Atmanah shreyas acharati. He does things which lead to the ultimate excellence of the self. That thing which is super ennobling. That thing which is preeminently worthwhile and valuable, if also more subtle than what immediately appeals to the mind. Shreyas. The Upanishads also tell us of Shreyas and Preyas. So, Tato Yati Paramgatim. The alternative, if you take shelter of Raga and Kama, we mentioned already in chapter 7, who remembers the verse? Adhamamgatim. You have two choices. Here Krishna mentions Paramgatim, and there Krishna mentions Adhamamgatim. The lowest destination, or the highest destination. And therefore he says, yashastra vidhamutsrijya vartate kama karata. We're talking about kama. Nasa siddhim avapnoti na sukham na param gatim. The person who discards scriptural injunctions and acts according to his own whim, whim means lust, he attains neither perfection nor happiness nor the supreme destination. Tasmat, therefore, Shastram pramanam te karya karya vivastitao. Shastram gyatva shastra vidhanoktam karma kartami hardhasi. You should understand what is your duty and what is not your duty by the regulations of scriptures. Knowing these rules and regulations, you should act such that you are gradually elevated. These are some things we can think about here. Srila Prabhupada says very clearly in his purports here also, that the only criterion for judging whether a person is being elevated or degraded, the only criterion, anybody have any ideas about this? What is the criteria for judging whether you're going up or going down? Yeah. Good answers. Yes, in the here. All good answers. She had the right answer. What the scripture says to do. If you obey, then you are elevated. If you disobey, you are degraded. Period. It is just like a dog. The dog has only one choice. Either you obey or you don't obey. So we are like that. Dvipadapashu means that you are in need of reformation. And the only way to be reformed is to either obey the authoritative injunction or not. Now this is psychologically alien to the modern mindset. Because what we're proposing here is a very powerful, code of contact. Code of conduct. It's a hierarchically ordered worldview that involves unqualified submission. And that's very, very unappealing to the modern mind. Unappealing to the psychology that is created through by sinful activity in particular. This kind of authoritarian and very limiting structure we fight against this. Especially in the West, there are many sophisticated ideologies constructed in order to fight this. But this is all coming from the demoniac nature. So, therefore, Prabhupada's purports are very valuable. And I'd like to point out in closing again that Prabhupada's trajectory in the last several years of his preaching in this world, he was urgently, repeatedly, increasingly, and very clearly emphasizing the increase of vidhi-based devotional life, rules and regulations. His instructions on Varnashram Dharma can be seen in that context, but in general, Pancharatriya is also part of this principle. I have to stop here because I'm sorry for going over time a little bit. If anybody has some questions, we can answer maybe one or two. Yes, Prabhuji, Shuva Krishna.
As to a woman of this world, is
repeat your question.
I'm saying we hear that the human beings, the beauty of human beings are compared to frogs in terms of demigods. So why Indra becomes attached to enjoying it?
Because we think we're frogs. The whole condition, what it means to be a conditioned soul is that we get this human body and then we think I'm one of these things. And then, the senses, they have to react to their sense objects, because for the male set of senses, the female set of senses is the sense object. And when one is conditioned to consider himself the male human, then along with that condition, the characteristic of that conditioning is that the female human becomes the most attractive
thing. My question was, why Indra becomes attached to people of this earthly planet?
Yeah.
Surprising.
I don't have a ready answer for that from Shastra. Why does a demigod sometimes find it sanguine to approach the women of this realm? I mean, we find this with Kunti and Suryadev as well, right? Sometimes they do. I mean, I don't really know. I can't say that. I mean, I don't remember when I was a demigod, if I ever was. That's part of the package also. You forget, you conditioned by one thing means you cannot retain the consciousness that's appropriate for another. Conditioned soul. But the general principle, the logic of it, we can understand. We are conditioned. And how are we conditioned? I mentioned three times. Sangat. By Sangha. You associate with something long enough, then you identify with it. I mean, Chanakya Kautilya said, even a wise man comes to grief by excessive association with those who are miserable. You see? And Bhagavatam itself says, even a learned man, vidvangsam abhikarshati, he becomes attracted on occasion. If he sits with his mother, or his sister, or his daughter. And if you read the news, which is sometimes not advisable, you will see that there are such reports. Right? Children even. They cannot even wait for the bud to blossom. And not even the opposite sex also. When the psychology has become cultivated through these godless ideologies and demonic activities to the extent that one is so agitated that it doesn't even matter if the person is the opposite sex anymore. Then they have homosex. Okay?
Remember, Srila Prabhupada mentions in Nectar of Instruction that a preacher of Krishna consciousness is always beyond the clutches of death. Can you elaborate on it?
Okay, but we're getting a little off topic with this question and we're already over time. So maybe this one here. Microphone out of here. And anyone is, of course, free to leave. It's 9:10 already, so yes, please.
Sometimes we notice that even after following the regular principles, all the scriptural injunctions, the mind can sometimes wander here and there, especially with lusty desires. So my question is, are there any physical sadhana or practices that can be performed to control the consciousness, just like maybe cold showers, or is there any remedial or precautionary steps?
Yes, good diet, right? Good association mainly. I mean, these are artificial means, this is the point. The Shastra does advise these things to help brahmacharis in particular to maintain their vows on a tangible level, on a physical level. But that's not really the essence. The point is that the psychology has to change. Unless the psychology changes, one has not become samskrita, one remains prakrita, wild, uncultivated, unrefined. Right? So that's the point. And the Shastra, I use the word shishta. Shishta means a person who has been trained up, a person who has been fully educated, a person who has such good association that his behavior is proper, a person who is socialized in that way. That person can sustain human existence. In today's society, a person who has not been so benedicted, it will be very difficult for that person, even if he adopts these external means. So Prabhupada always emphasized the spiritual dimension here of elevating the consciousness to the transcendental plane, as he concluded in his purport. One can avoid so much trouble if one remains on the transcendental platform. That's not easy. So we have this, what we sometimes we call a safety net. When people are tightrope walking, it's assumed that there's a safety net underneath just in case he falls. Then he won't hit the ground, you see. So Varnashram society is like that. Dharma in general is like that. So, you know, we can look in Ayurvedic and yogic texts for some practical tips on how to maintain brahmacharya, but the main thing is good association. Because in that good association, the consciousness will change. Is that okay?
Thank you.
Anything else? One last one, maybe. This Prabhuji. Okay, go ahead. Either one.
Thank you, Prabhu. Just in the last part of your lecture, you mentioned about unqualified submission in modern context.
Yeah.
And could you expand on that in relation to submission
in a
to
moment,
Shastra?
But first let him ask his question.
Thank you. So my question is, we often sometimes hear that if we have some attachment, these material attachments, especially these lusty ones, that they should be replaced, param drishtva nivartate. So if we find ourselves so struggling with these attachments,
then increase the rules and regulations. That's what they're meant for.
Does that mean that we haven't had the higher taste?
It's relative. We can always say in Krishna conscious that a person is Krishna conscious but not Krishna conscious. In some ways we're Krishna conscious, in other ways we're not Krishna conscious because we're conditioned. Until we're absolutely sterling, pristine, pure devotees, this is the assumption. So yes, we have to work on it. We are Krishna conscious to some degree, but we're not Krishna conscious to the degree that when we chant the name Gauranga, tears shoot from our eyes like syringes. Raise your hand if you've seen somebody in this state at Mangalarti. Not very common. That is why Krishna said, he gives the statistics in Bhagavad Gita. It's not very common. So in a society wherein this is actually not very common, there has to be some objective social means of maintaining decency, and that is dharma. In the back here we had...
My question is, if I am associating with good devotee, but I have no Shraddha, just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, with one devotee associating, one devotee was associating with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but he fell down when he was going in south.
Yes.
So if I have no Shraddha, but I am associating with pure devotee, that will work? Or
if you continue to associate without committing offenses... What the faithless person has to guard against, even in good association, is aparad. Because aparad will destroy whatever little faith you do have. You at least have enough faith to associate with good devotees. And that's because you have not offended them. Therefore, if our shraddha is less, everybody has some shraddha. The shraddha is eternal. Shraddha mayo ayam purushaha. Krishna says the living entity, he's made out of faith. He's not separable from his faith. We all have faith. But what is the quality, or rather, what is the dilution of your faith? What is the contamination level of your faith? So if our faith is highly contaminated, that is to say, if it's shunted into the realm of Maya rather than Krishna consciousness, then we have to associate with more advanced devotees. If our faith is not sufficient that even in that association we can take full advantage, then we simply have to either seek better association or learn to take better advantage of the association we have. And the main thing, while doing these two things, we have to guard against is offenses, because that will kill whatever we've accomplished. So continue to associate, be patient, be enthusiastic, determined, follow the principles, ityadi, as Rupa Goswami mentions in Upadeshamrita. We have to be patient and determined. Now, with regard to your question, maybe you can repeat.
Thank you. I was just asking about unqualified submission that you mentioned at the end of the class in relation to submission to a scripture.
We have those of us who are socialized in the modern mindset, and it doesn't really matter whether you're a man or a woman, whether you are Eastern or Western, whether you are whatever your social, religious, or political or economic background, it doesn't really make any difference. Anybody, practically speaking, anybody socialized in the modern world is going to have an innate aversion to dharma, because that is the nature of this world. We mentioned in the beginning, dharma jnanadi bhisaha, right? Krishna swadhamo pagate dharmadi jnanadi saha. Krishna took dharma and jnana along with him when he left this world 5,000 years ago, in large part at least. And what we're left with here is just very little of either one. So where you do not have dharma, you must have adharma. And where adharma predominates, I mean, this is what Krishna has described in in the later chapters of Bhagavad Gita. He says the person who is this of the demoniac bent, he considers adharma to be dharma. That is tamasic intelligence. And the person who is in tamoguna, he doesn't perceive anything at all. And the person who is in rajaguna, he's not sure what to do, you see. So therefore I mentioned in the beginning, I tried to emphasize that especially in the modern world, we have to, first of all, recognize that we have an unhealthy, unwholesome criminal default that we have to reform. This is the point. The problem is that, again, you know, like he mentioned, we don't really have pure faith, or we don't have very strong faith. Our faith is called komala shraddha. And therefore we waver, or we doubt, or we get dissuaded by bad association, or, you know, so many things happen to us. But again, the solution to the problem is always the same. We accept better association. Better association means association of persons who are like me, persons that I can relate to practically, but better than me in terms of the depth of their faith. What determines a more advanced devotee from a neophyte devotee is only this: faith, the depth of the faith. A person whose faith in deep is deep, that person will follow the rules and regulations that are given by the spiritual master. Let me just stir up the pot here a little bit, if you'll permit me. I'm going to read something that's a little hot here for many people in the modern world, just to illustrate this point. Srila Prabhupada comments on text 7 of chapter 16, in every civilized society there is some set of scriptural rules and regulations which are followed from the beginning. Especially among the Aryans, those who adopt the Vedic civilization and are known as the most advanced civilized peoples. Those who do not follow the scriptural injunctions are supposed to be demons. Therefore, it is stated here that the demons do not know these scriptural rules, nor do they have any inclination to follow them. Most of them do not know them, and even if some of them know, they have not the tendency to follow them. This is dangerous. This is the main thing that we're dealing with. They have no faith, nor are they willing to act in terms of the Vedic injunctions. As for behavior, there are many rules and regulations guiding human behavior, such as Manu Samhita, which is the law of the human race. Even up to today, those who are Hindu follow the Manu Samhita. Laws of inheritance and other legalities are derived from this book. Now, in the Manu Samhita, it is clearly stated that a woman should not be given freedom. That does not mean that women are to be kept as slaves, but they are like children. Children are not given freedom, but that does not mean they're kept as slaves. The demons have now neglected such injunctions, and they think that women should be given as much freedom as men. However, this has not improved the social condition of the world. He goes on in the same spirit. He talks about properly behavior according to Manu Samhita, and that's the example that he gives. I think we can all see now how this is problematic. There's a lot of opposition to these principles. That's the whole point. And it's because of impiety for the most part. Because for thousands of years, people had no problem with this in any culture. Tulsidas, he's very infamous, notorious, because he says, your drum, your dog, and your wife, they all sound better the more you beat them. That's a very offensive statement to the modern mindset. But in fact, the same exact sentiment is expressed in English by another poet a few hundred years later. Did you know this? So, I mean, these things are ubiquitous. I mean, there is abuse of these principles as widespread as their neglect. That's another thing to consider. Therefore, people's faith is destroyed. So what we actually need is people who follow the injunctions of the Shastras. And I would say that Pancharatriki vidhis are actually more relevant for Vaishnavas than Manusmriti even. But the point is that unless the consciousness is centered on Krishna, there's nothing to prevent this exploitation from going on. Not that Hindu society or Vedic society, Manava society, has cornered the market in exploitation of caste relations or social hierarchy, but because we see that the same thing happens in every society, including those that claim to be egalitarian. But the point is that unless the mind and the heart are centered on Krishna, one's motives can never be pure, and therefore they must eventually degrade, because that is the trajectory, as we mentioned already. Is that clear? It should be disturbing, and it should be enlightening at the same time. Because that's what the Shastra does. Okay, I really have to stop now because it's 9:30. Thank you very much.